The way we really work in our organization is to recognize we'll never be special to any customer out there unless we're special first to the people who choose to work with us and share our mission about trying to be, you know, a trusted global brand, and then embrace the notion of a duty of care and everything that it represents.
Welcome to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. The show tagline is Live, Work, Love Colorado, and this is the show featuring world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Bill Grable, owner and CEO of Grable Companies. Bill is a tremendous leader who has reinvented Grable to be an international leader in supporting corporate clients with their workforce mobility. Hey, good move tuning into this interview. There's a talent war out there, and it's global. This will be a powerful episode covering reinvention, global workforce insights, and why an astounding 94% of Glassdoor reviewers approve of the company's culture. Thanks to sponsors Community Banks of Colorado and MicroStar Cake Logistics. I appreciate their support for Colorado entrepreneurs and for this show. Okay, let's get started with Bill Grable of Grable Companies. Welcome, Bill.
Hi, Dave. Nice to be here.
I'm glad you are. And I think probably the easiest and best place to start is with a bit of an overview of Grable Global Services, you know, sort of a short version of helping us understand what you're all about.
Sure. Our primary market is really the major Fortune 500 companies. And what we do to serve and support them is enable their talent to basically be deployed anywhere in the world. And the objective basically is to get the right talent in the right seats at the right time in the right places. So it can be anywhere from an intern to a new hire coming out of college to all the way up to the C-suite, and as they have continuing operations or otherwise expanding into new locations.
Well, we're going to talk quite a bit about this whole notion of the idea around workforce mobility and this war on talent. First, I wanted to let you know that I was excited to do this interview for two reasons. One, because of the great company that Grable is now. And second, and here's where I want to start, this decision you've made all along the way to reinvent the business. So can you talk about maybe some of the decisions you've made to become the Grable that you are today?
Yeah, it's interesting, Dave. You know, a lot of it is just recognizing how the world has changed. You know, so technology is a huge influence. Obviously, the way that we deliver services to people today is much different than it was just 10 years ago, let alone 20 or 30 years ago. So what might examples be? You know, complementing the use of really highly qualified consultants that are in a concierge function, if you will, supporting individuals, but coupling that with mobile-enabled technology. So, you know, whether it's the purchase of a home, the application of a visa, things of that nature used to have entirely different rigors around them, you know, just a few short years ago. Yeah. And today you now have this kind of convergence of high tech and high touch that really become the defining features of, if you will, excellence in service delivery from the transferee point of view.
Yeah, I mean, early in your history, there you were in the business of moving things, and now you're really in the business of moving people and moving talent. So let's break down some of the terms that you use to create some context. I mean, what you'll use during our conversation, are you going to talk about world workforce mobility? You're going to talk about workplace mobility. What are those things now?
Yes, workforce mobility is really this whole notion of, first of all, the changing shape of work in front of us, you know, and you hear things about the war for talent, you hear things about the gig economy, you hear things really about all the immigration processes and Brexit and everything else. And all of these things have such huge ripple effects that impact the major global corporations and where they find talent and how they are deployed. So that's workforce mobility. Yeah. Workplace mobility kind of runs in parallel with that, because then you hear things about, you know, the traditional office space, office environment is changing, and you have remote workers, and, you know, you have hoteling concepts in traditional office environments. And some companies, you know, the pendulum swings where they're okay with having more remote workers, and other companies are, having gone through that cycle, then want to bring people back so that, you know, cohesion, culture, and things like that are more vibrant. So, inside those dynamics, then there's all even almost a psychology around how is the workspace laid out to facilitate collaboration or otherwise break down silos within organizations.
It's interesting. I just saw an article in the paper that sort of put all that on its head because they were talking about how, you know, we'd all gone to these cubeless open space things and how now the workers are actually wearing headphones and use of email and instant messaging has gone up. Essentially, it's backfiring. It's been, I was really fascinated about that article.
Yeah, and there's certainly significant kernels of truth, if you will, in that. And so you are seeing many major companies who maybe have experimented with more of that open floor plan and, you know, your flex hours and you can come and go as you please and reserve a work table if you need it.
Yeah.
That, if you will, lack of rigor or structure, I would say the trend is coming back to where companies are more inclined to have that structure to stimulate collaboration and in some cases, even accountability.
Well, now there are a lot of companies that sort of do what you do at a national level or locally and so forth. What I really like to dig into more is this global war for talent and how companies are using you to sort of explore how can we compete and win for global talent? And they're starting to get pretty creative, aren't they?
Yeah, there's several lenses on that. First of all, just 10 years ago, you know, there was huge unemployment in almost every economy around the world, right? And so it's really amazing how fast in many instances, economies have recovered to where there's full employment. And then that which is available is highly contested for, right? Uh-huh. So whether it's through poaching or whatever, it's a very competitive landscape. And then you look at the industries and whether it's healthcare, technology, energy, consumer products, all of those industries are going through some level of transformation and change.
Well, how are companies, maybe think of an example or two of companies that are doing some really kind of interesting, creative things using you to win over competitors as they pursue the best talent in the world?
I would say, Dave, the most evolved examples would be where companies are using analytics and asking us to look at the populations they've moved in the past, where they recruited those people from, what kind of policy they were relocated under. Policy meaning, you know, what array of benefits were they provided to facilitate and accommodate the relocation. And then that's plotted against their performance evaluations once they have arrived in the destination. And so they're looking at streams to say, with almost a predictive lens, to say, if we recruit people out of this location under this policy deployed to these areas or regions, they are likely to be more productive and effective in getting accomplished whatever it is they need to do. Right? That is the most evolved examples of how this business is transforming and leveraging a lot of the tools that are available.
So is that a resource available only to big, pretty well? I mean, it sounds like it would be a resource only that big companies that are globally positioned can actually deploy using someone like you to help them.
Good question. The reality is in those big companies, having the IT resources dedicated to, you know, kind of design the algorithms and so forth that get you into producing those analytic outputs, they're so far down on the project task list inside their companies. So they have to turn to
us. You've developed those tools.
Right. We help really deploy the means by which they can start populating in some of their data along with our operational data. And then the thing we don't generally see is the performance data of the individual. But
they can plot against that.
They can start putting that in.
So it's, you know, it's what I'm hearing and what I'm thinking as you're telling me about that is that, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, companies would use all that data and all that analytics to try to drive customer behavior. Now they're using it to try to drive employee behavior or employee acquisition behavior.
Yes. On the front end, really what they're trying to do is remove the risk. And part of the risk is related to avoiding unnecessary or redundant costs. So one of the factors is that relocating somebody obviously disrupts their life. If they don't settle in well at the destination, they're not likely to be at ultimate productivity. They may not engage well with the other team members that they're involved with. And as well, you know, they may not be very good members in the community that they're a new arrival in, right? So their life satisfaction, let alone their job satisfaction, goes down.
And all this became more important, it seems, like now that employers are looking globally for talent, they may find somebody halfway around the world that they need to plug in somewhere else halfway around the world, and they have to do that with some level of certainty, or predictive certainty anyway.
No question. And then there's a huge wild card in here with the fluidness of all the immigration policies and travel bans and, you know, Brexit, and what's the treatment of, you know, EU nationals living in the UK, and what are the treatments of the UK nationals living in the EU?
Well, you've got to track all that stuff, right, for your clients. How do you do that?
Oh, gosh.
too big of a question?
Well, it takes a village, and certainly you monitor, you know, the political landscape, and there are all sorts of bulletins and releases that come out about, you know, various countries and what the new requirements are, whether education-wise or, you know, filling jobs in a certain economy that they just don't have the people there, but in other jobs where there's plenty of people there, then the barrier comes up a little higher.
Yeah, yeah.
And in addition to that, then we work very closely with a number of the immigration law firms that, you know, again, they constantly are monitoring the regulatory landscape and knowing what types of workers from what countries will get the fastest cycle time of visa approvals going into a certain country. So it's complex.
Yeah, and if a company wants to access the global workforce, it's just, you don't just put an ad out there. I mean, there's so much. It's not, you got to manage the visa, you got to manage their life, you got to manage their family, you got to manage all these other things. And what I'm hearing is that, you know, Grable has figured out the systems and approaches to do that.
You're looking figuring out is an interesting thing, because, you know, literally day by day, week by week, things are constantly evolving and transforming. Yeah. You know, it's interesting sidelight here, Dave. You know, this is, if you will, my 50th year in this industry. I started out when I was 7 years old riding my bike to a warehouse and got to sweep the floors, but been a student of the game the whole time. And I have to tell you that just in the last 2 years, the velocity and magnitude of change is unlike anything preceding, you know, the prior 48 years. And so much of it is, if you will, regulatory and, you know, with you know, again, the immigration, the travel bans, the Brexit items, the tightness of labor markets, the convergence of technologies, the leveraging of those, lifestyle, consumer behavior changes. Oh my gosh, you know, you have same-sex couples. Some countries, they won't allow that coming in. And so you may have the best talent in the world, but they happen to be, you know, of a configuration that government isn't going to allow them into the country.
Wow. Hey, I want to ask you just a moment for an example or a couple of, that's a really good example, a couple of other examples of some complex scenarios, real specific ones you've had to manage for clients. First, I want to remind my listeners that this is ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Bill Grable, owner and CEO of Grable Companies. And so getting back to, you know, from almost like a human interest standpoint, what are some, a couple of examples of really interesting things you've had, a challenge you've had to surmount for clients?
Oh, gosh. Well, I'll start with, there's a spectrum of, depending on the kind of client or industry they're in. On the one hand, take an energy company or a minerals or a mining company, right? Their activity isn't so much going on in London or Shanghai or Hong Kong. It's going on in the remote places of the world.
Right.
Right? So there's one style of helping people relocate where maybe the employee is only going to see their family every 30 days or something like that. And they're in, if you will, the wilderness or at the project site for those 30 days. They're living in a compound kind of thing, and generally pretty Spartan accommodations, which really are paid for by the company at that destination. But what we'll help them with is their family may stage where the kids can be schooled, but it might be 2, 3, 4 hours of flight away.
Wow.
So think of the Middle East. You know, a lot of families are hubbed out of Dubai, but then the worker may be working somewhere off in the oil fields.
Sure.
Think of Canada, and people might be housed in Vancouver, but they're working the tar sands.
Yeah.
The other end of the spectrum is, you know, Hong Kong, London, you know, very expensive, large, urban, with highly comped employees doing massive work for their respective companies. So the style of delivering services and their needs obviously differ greatly.
Well, and speaking of style of delivery, when you talk about your approach of helping clients, you use a term called duty of care. Mm. And you talk about your registered trademark, commitments made, commitments kept. Talk about this duty of care.
Oh, happy to. It really applies in two contexts, Dave. One is for the individual, right? We have a responsibility, and there's a degree of trust that says if you're flying into a new location and you're picked up at the airport and you're showing that city, the duty of care begins with who is the person that is kind of your chaperone and guide, right? Are they a safe driver? Do they have, you know, any number of background checks so that, you know, you don't have somebody that potentially could commit a crime with somebody that they're touring around the town, right? Duty of care in this day and age around your personal identifiable information. There's a ton of information we obtain about the people relocating and having safe and secure and just the right amount of that shared with a service provider in any one location. Duty of care as it applies to, you know, people have stuff and how well is that stuff taken care of and does it, you know, arrive on time and is it protected in a craftsmanlike manner, right? Conversely, there's a duty of care that applies to the client. And in many regards, those clients are engaging us as a fiduciary. You know, they're spending a lot of money for a productive purpose in deploying valuable talent. And so they want to get a return on that investment of deploying those people. And the duty of care we have is to make sure that, you know, every corporation is hyper cost conscious today, but yet they know they have to make an investment in this process. So what are we doing to demonstrate to the client that through the firms we select, the time we allocate to the process, and the deliverables that are received, that client is getting good value for money.
That's easy to say as the CEO. It's harder to convey that through a cultural norm such that your team and your clients feel what you just said. What goes on to make that happen?
That's a great question. It's one thing to do everything in this country where the language is common and generally the social norms are common and so forth. But over the last 10 years, we've kind of become a global employer. And one of the most fascinating parts of my life journey and professional journey have been asking yourself the scary question. When we open in Asia or when we open in Europe, will our values and principles translate to the workforces we hire there who are expected to perform against a duty of care as we describe it? Couple of quick examples. You know, we opened up in Prague in the Czech Republic 10 years ago. Eastern Europe, we recruited specifically to a demographic of people who grew up in communism, who once they had freedom, they went to get educated in the Western European universities and came back to the Czech Republic as part of this new cadre of people who had a national pride to help restore the Czech Republic in the normal order of the European economy, right? Mm-hmm. So they had a motivation beyond just wanting to work for us. They wanted to help make a difference in the Czech Republic. And so the reason I bring that up, knowing that that was the strategy we wanted to recruit to, I had no idea if these people could really tangibilize what our customer base, you know, their notion of being free to move and have choices of what employer they would sign up with and where they would be deployed and doing what kind of work. You know, from their youngest days, that was not a concept that would be familiar to them. Let alone, you know, most of the people surrounding them as young people, their notion of materialism was nowhere near that of what somebody in the UK or the US would be. So that these objects that people are relocating around the world, some have extraordinary value, but don't really stand out as being special. But how do you drive that empathy, right? So it really gets down to connecting with the people on the ground around things that are universal. And what I found very quickly, this may seem a little strange, but I think everybody throughout the world goes through a subconscious quest of trying to find more truth, love, and integrity in their lives. And so regardless of generation, regardless of society, regardless of, you know, kind of religious background or whatever, I think a common denominator in the human experience is looking for these things to be manifested in your life.
Well, you know, even, and I so appreciate that line, you know, that you believe that there's a universal value around truth, love, and integrity. And yet we've seen around the world that integrity is means different things to different, right? So as the corporation that's responsible for connecting one side of the world to the other and one worker to an environment, how do you manage the notion that integrity means different things in different places? For example, maybe love means different things. I don't know. Maybe truth certainly means different things in some place. So how do you deal with that? Yeah.
So we have to articulate that and create examples, both in terms of how it applies in our culture. What do we mean by this? And how does it apply in the eyes of our customers who are ultimately paying all of our paychecks? And, you know, there's another interesting pivot off of that, which is, you know, in the service industry, your outputs are directly proportional to the engaged efforts of your workforce, right?
Yes.
So, if you have a disengaged workforce, but you position yourself or market yourself as delivering extraordinary service and value, oh my gosh, you're pushing a big rock very up a tall hill.
And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and I'm speaking with Bill Grable, owner and CEO of Grable Companies. Please visit ProCo360.com, where you can subscribe to my newsletter for episodes, my blog, and books I'm listening to on Audible. Again, that's ProCo360.com. I hope you're enjoying this episode with Bill Grable. Please rate ProCo 360 in your app and share it with friends. And Bill, I want to shift gears in just a moment. After I ask you one more question, I want to shift gears to this, to a whole question around culture, a culture that supports your belief and duty of care. First, though, I want to ask, we've talked all about this global workforce and global mobility, and you're based in Colorado. So can you talk about being based in Colorado, what role that's had in your business success, and how from Colorado you're approaching this world talent scenario?
Yeah, great question. Well, first of all, we originally migrated here from Wisconsin about 30 years ago, and that was done because we recognized we needed to move from being a regional to a national and a national to an international and then to a global company. Big part of that selection process had to do with the creation and operation of DIA. And it's really fun to see now, you know, 25 years on or whatever, you know, the number of nonstop flights in here in the U.S. and 25 international flights. So Denver is a wonderful hub from a, you know, a logistics efficiency point of view for getting our people out to where they need to be, or conversely bringing clients in to see and you know, kind of kick the tires of our culture and our company. Aside from that, you know, another key part of what we love about Colorado is just really the workforce demographic. Highly educated, it's young. Aspirationally, it has many of the same characteristics as our clients' transferees. So the people sitting at the front line serving our clients' transferees often get into these interesting dialogues with the transferees about their personal journeys and why they're going and what they hope to accomplish and things of that nature.
Yeah. Well, as we talk about your employees, especially your frontline, I do want to shift now this conversation to one of culture, because Grable has done a really impressive job. In fact, on Glassdoor.com, which everyone knows about, you score 4.0 out of 5, and that's actually really high against an average of 3.4. More astounding to me is a 94% rating of those who approve of the CEO against an average of 69%. I mean, your scores are huge. What do you think? Why do you think that 94% of those on, you know, who are reviewing your company approve of the CEO?
Oh gosh.
Are you that nice of a guy? I mean, is it just about giving them free lunch?
You know, I mentioned earlier, truth, love, and integrity, right? Everybody goes through life with challenges. Every business has challenges. But, you know, to speak openly about the challenges, the opportunities, the sense of teamness required, taking personal interest in not just positions or the people behind them, but their families, their motives. You know, as a private business, as a family business, we can lean into that notion perhaps a little more than a public company. Mm-hmm. And we're still small enough. You know, we have about 800 people in the organization, 600 in the U.S.
That's a big company to maintain a culture of real depth around those values.
Yeah, so, you know, first of all, it takes a team. And so you need to have like-minded leaders and there needs to be a rhythm. You know, I can't cover all the bases and know everybody, but hopefully, you know, I do make it a point to be visible and if you will, in the field in each location at least a couple of times a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, because the comments are pretty impressive. Here are a few of the comments. Stellar workplace and corporate culture, motivated and cares about being a great human being as well as a leader, ability to grow, and then as you mentioned, truth, love, integrity. I mean, maybe you can't answer this, but there aren't a lot of CEOs that people say those kinds of things about.
Well, thank you. you know, I think it just depends on where you insert your energy in terms of what are the cornerstones of your business. And my observation is so many businesses' cornerstones are simply around making money for the people at the top, and then everything else kind of falls downstream and in a subordinated kind of context. The way we really work in our organization is to recognize we'll never be special to any customer out there unless we're special first to the people who choose to work with us mm-hmm. and share our mission about trying to be, you know, a trusted global brand, and then embrace the notion of a duty of care and everything that it represents. And that's a big ask, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but I get inspired by looking at people who work in hospice or who work in emergency rooms or who work with special needs children. And there are people on this planet that are wired as extraordinarily selfless caregivers who derive great satisfaction and energy about being of service to others. So we know those people are on this planet, mm-hmm. right? And so while we're an industry not many people would have top of mind, what we have to do is identify the people who are wired that way, mm-hmm. and then we can train them to do the very specific things that customers expect of us.
That's a, you know, as you're saying that, I'm actually thinking you'd probably rather hire someone who is a former special needs school teacher than someone who used to sell a commodity to be on your sales team.
Oh, no question. There's, you know, in terms of, our talent acquisition process and some of the filtration that we mm-hmm. use and even the messaging that we put out there as a prospective employer, no doubt, it's character, it's heart, it's service to others. Mm-hmm. You know, you would find that those are key themes that we message. And it scares some people and they want no part of an environment about that, and which is fine. I mean, there's a lot of different things people can self-express what they're naturally wired and what they derive fulfillment from. I don't need 1 out of 6 billion people. We just need a core of 800 out of 6 billion. And I guarantee there's thousands, if not millions of people who have this caregiver gene in them and only wish they worked in a company where that gene was nurtured and supported.
Yeah.
And that's what we try to do.
That's really cool. I want to play a clip from a book called Wait, What? By James Ryan. And I want to get your take on that.
How you help matters just as much as that you do help, which is why it is essential to begin by asking, how can I help? If you start with this question, you are asking with humility for direction. You are recognizing that others are experts in their own lives, and you are affording them the opportunity to remain in charge, even if you are providing some help.
So this notion of how can I help and keeping others in charge of their own lives, how does that resonate with you?
Oh, gosh, really strongly. For probably 40 years, one of the trademark taglines in our company is, what do you need and how may we help you? So to the author's point there, you know, rather than coming to you and saying, Dave, you need this, mm-hmm. or Dave, mm-hmm. I'm going to sell you this, right? If you open the conversation of saying, Dave, what do you need as you're going to be relocating to Beijing? Mm-hmm. What's important to you? How may we be of best assistance to you? You change the dialogue. You change the feeling about our one-to-one interaction.
Yeah.
Right? So I very much am in alignment with the author in the clip that you just played there. And that's, in a sense, hardwired into, every dimension of training for almost every function. Mm. I don't care if you're somebody handling claims, if it's somebody helping you buy a home, if it's somebody that you need to get a visa or a work permit.
Yeah.
That, how may I help you, as an opening question, is just a constant in our interaction with both clients, transferees, and our workforce, and for that matter, our suppliers. Because one of the forgotten equations, I think, in business today is suppliers are so gruesomely commoditized and subordinated.
Yeah.
And again, our suppliers are in the service industry, and we're their customer. And if, as their customer, we treat them with a certain amount of indifference as a lesser grade, being,
mm-hmm.
how motivated are their people going to be to service, our customers when we are kind of the connector, right? So one of the things that I'm really proud of in our organization is that the vast majority of our suppliers, while they also serve our competitors, will reference that, you know what? We love working with you guys the best because you're the most proactive in understanding how we can win.
Yeah.
And if we then communicate, the sweet spot of success of our suppliers to our own internal consultants and supply chain managers, you're just positioning more people for success, and not many people wake up each morning wanting to fail.
You know, that's true. I love that you talk about your suppliers in that way, and that really your business success relies on helping your suppliers succeed as much as you're helping your own clients succeed. Right. I mean, one of the greatest compliments I had when I had my business is one vendor, actually several, would call me first. Dave, somebody's offering me a gig. Before I take it, do you have anything? I mean, that's what you want, right? Or people who are so loyal as suppliers that you can rely on them in that way.
Yeah. Well, in a sense, you're getting discretionary effort that is earned because of the trust that you have built. And that trust is a function of either the transparency, the clarity of communication, or the notion of mutuality.
Yeah.
Right? And so many customer-supplier relations, the notion of mutuality is just absent.
Yeah. And, it actually takes the joy out of working with people when you don't have that sense of how can we both win.
Yeah.
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 I want to wrap up with one more question around culture, because with 800, look, every story in the different business periodicals and all that is like, this company with 12 people has a great culture. This company with 30 people has a great culture. They're all partying together, all doing stuff. They drink beer and all that. You got 800 people, right? It's not easy. So what do you think is the key thing you're doing that has allowed you to scale culture at the level you have?
Vulnerability from the top. Approaching every single one of those workers saying, we're living in uncharted territory. It's kind of like a Lewis and Clark voyage, and the interesting thing about that, they had to paddle upstream. So how many certainties do we have before us in this day and age of commerce and technology? How many things are going to stand still so we can really master them? We're going to be in an era of constant change and transformation. So at least let's come together as a community and support each other with the best of intentions for, if you will, our community within the company. But then that's community's purpose is to be serving other people who themselves are taking a big risk and putting their families' lives in transition and going to other places, right?
Yeah.
So, it takes a certain amount of socializing purpose amongst people.
I had so much trouble doing that as a young businessman. I owned the company and I didn't want to appear vulnerable because I thought it was my job to know how to do these things. And as the leader, I'm supposed to know where I'm going and how we're getting there. And your approach is quite different.
Well, to be honest, if I came across as a know-it-all, I'd be, smoked out as a blowhard.
Maybe it could have been.
But this is a different era, Dave. Executing across continents and countries and, the different technology configurations that, we have to support and integrating with our clients and, some of them, their systems are confoundingly complex. And so for our IT teams to sort it out and figure it out, and how are you going to get this data passed efficiently and populating the right reports that drive the analytics? And I mean, there are so many examples of being in uncharted territory.
Well, what do you do when someone comes to you and they say something that's really disappointing about your firm, about the organization, like it's going wrong and it's not going right? I mean, how do you, what do you, what's your first step? What do you do?
Well, assuming it's something we're expected to be performing on behalf of a client, you know, there's a rigor of a root cause analysis, which is pretty standard. The main thing is you don't want to shut down communication and put people into a position of where they feel blamed. Mm. So it really begins, I guess, if you will, with asking good questions of, well, Dave, how do you think this happened? Mm. Or where was our blind spot? You know, why didn't that get caught earlier in the service stream? Or, so again, I think the questions are examples of kind of institutional vulnerability in saying, you know, we have a standard, we have a set of objectives, but we're having to apply those against a landscape that doesn't stand still.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, yeah.
And so we're bound to have things that will go off the rails, and our job is to have safety nets along every rail.
And culturally, it sounds like one of those safety nets is that people don't feel that they'll be blamed as much as they'll be part of understanding why it happened and what the solution will be.
Yes, exactly. I don't know any other way to go about it, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
if you blamed them and then they shut down and then everybody's silent and then I got to figure it out, you know, that just isn't going to work.
So what's next for Grable?
Oh, gosh. Well, the real opportunity for us is to take, you know, if you will, our family name and business, which, you know, I'm grateful that we've had whatever success we've had here serving United States multinational companies, and it's enabled our footprint to grow globally. But now the next natural progression is to take the Grable brand, for example, into Switzerland and win Nestle's global business, or into Germany and win BMW's global business, or into China. And this is just an amazing set of opportunities for us that I never would have dreamed just 2 years ago. But, you know, the companies like Tencent or JD or Alibaba or, you know, Huawei, those are suddenly now prospects that have an interest in our brand. They've been monitoring what we've done to support, you know, whether European companies or U.S. companies. And they're just on this emergent journey of becoming, you know, global companies themselves and deploying people, whether to the U.S. or Africa or Australia. And that is absolutely a frontier landscape for this industry.
Sounds exciting. So
again, you know, if you came at it like a know-it-all, you'd be laughed off the, whatever, off the podium. But if you come in there with a degree of humility and you say, hey, what do you need? How can we help you? What have your experiences been? What are your objectives? It's strange. People, if you take that with a certain sense of humility, oh my gosh, do they open up very quickly? Mm-hmm. And so we have opportunities all over the world that are frankly kind of exploding in front of us. That's really exciting.
Wow. Well, I think that's a good place at which to wrap. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. And today on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado, I've shared a conversation with Bill Grable, owner and CEO of Grable Companies. What an amazing leader, demonstrates that leadership focused on duty of care is consistent with success, based here in Colorado. To my listeners, thanks for joining me on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. This is Dave Tabor. My mission is to feature world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast via your app and reviewing the show, and by subscribing to the ProCo 360 newsletter. Thanks again to the show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, Jones & Keller, and the Colorado Chamber of Commerce, and to show engineer Mike here at 3rd & James Studios. This show and past shows are available at ProCo 360 and via your favorite podcast app. Search ProCo 360. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing.